First thing I want to do is I want to recognize my co-author, John Teasdale, and some of you might know him. He's a weed ecologist, and as I go through the talk, you'll recognize that he's got a pretty important role in this talk. On top of that, he's my boss, so I have to tell you that, I guess. let me see if I, what do I need to do, just that? Okay. In the Mid-Atlantic area, my slide of the Mid-Atlantic is coming up next, so you can orient yourself relative to where Tim showed you where he is. But in the Mid-Atlantic area, we're finding that there's an increasing interest in, among conventional producers, but also organic producers in doing organic grains, and including sometimes forage with that. And of course, this increase is due to the increase in milk and meat demand, and therefore the increase in grain prices. The Maryland NRCS is supporting some of this through the transition to organic program, and because of that, there's an increasing need for information on how these systems perform, both for the agencies, but also for the farmers. This is just this is for the economists in the crowd. I know there's at least two of you out there. This is the motivation for especially some of the people coming to organic lately for why they are interested in organic. And I guess if you look at the means here for the years 2000 to 2005, which will be where a lot of the data I'm talking about come from. Where did my L go? Oh, there I go. Sorry. We're seeing at least a doubling in corn prices, in soybean prices, and in wheat prices for organic if you get the price premium. Now, these prices, of course, are prior to the biofuels explosion, but at the same time, that ratio, as I understand it, is about the same still. So it's still a relevant. What's that? Organic's even higher, right. So the motivation's still there. This is my map to show you where we're at. I'm from Beltsville, Maryland, which I don't know if you can see it. There's a little blue dot right there. This is one definition of the Mid-Atlantic region from New Jersey down to North Carolina. And there's an important agricultural area called the Mid-Atlantic Coastal Plain Soils, and we're in that region. A lot of people live here, as Tim mentioned, near where he's from. At Beltsville, our average annual precipitation is about 1,100 millimeters of rainfall, and our temperature is 12.8, so we are not hot. I mean, we are not cold, as Tim mentioned. The project I'm going to talk to you about is called the USDA ALS Farming Systems Project. It was established in 1996. It's on these coastal plain soils, like I mentioned. We're in the Chesapeake Bay watershed. It's four replicated blocks. We have each crop rotation phase present every year, and we have plots that are large enough to use commercial size farm equipment. And the overall objective of this project is to evaluate the sustainability of five different cropping systems. Those five systems summarized here are: one is a no-till system, which is a corn, and we do harvest it for grain, and then rye cover crop, soybean the second year, winter wheat planted that same fall and harvested the following year, and then a double crop soybean planted. This is a fairly common rotation. We do this both no-till and with chisel-till, which are both common ways of doing this in the area. And then we have three different organic systems. One is a two-year system, a corn, rye, cover crop, soybean the second year, and then we have a hairy vetch to provide the nitrogen for going back to corn again. We have a three-year rotation, which is corn, the rye cover crop again, then we go back to soybeans, and then we have a wheat, and then after the wheat is harvested, we have a vetch cover crop. So that three-year rotation is very similar to the conventional systems, except that we replace that double crop soybean with a hairy vetch. The organic six-year rotation is similar to the three-year rotation, except after having the wheat, we go to alfalfa, and then we keep the alfalfa in for about 3 years, and that supplies the nitrogen coming back to corn again. That's the way the systems looked since 2000. When I got there in 1999, we made some changes. Some of those I have highlighted here. One is that we expanded our no-till and chisel-till systems, which had been two-year rotations, corn followed by wheat and then soybeans. We basically stuck a soybean in that after the corn, so that not a corn, soybean, wheat, soybeans. And that was motivated in part by feedback from farmers and others. When you do no-till wheat following corn like that, you can get a lot of diseases, and that was a concern. The organic hay rotation, which is now a six-year rotation, used to be just a four-year rotation, so it was the same rotation, and instead of the alfalfa, we had red clover and orchard grass hay, and that was just left in for 2 years. So that wasn't providing quite enough nitrogen, so we wanted to get a little more nitrogen into the system, so we chose alfalfa as our nitrogen source. Plus, on top of that, a lot of times the orchard grass took over the red clover, depending on the weather that year. I'm not going to get into all the details of how we manage those various systems, but I'll leave that for questions afterwards if you have any. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to mimic commercial systems. The conventional systems are certainly doing that. The organic systems, we weren't sure if they're doing that very well, but by talking to farmers, we find that there's people in Maryland, at least, doing very similar rotations as those three systems. So they do seem to represent what farmers are doing. The comparisons I'm going to show you are systems level differences. In other words, the systems differ in more than one factor. And we've gotten management input from organic farmers in the area. The Maryland Extension is very useful to us on an annual basis. We have very good farm crews, so I think our systems represent the efforts of decent farmers. And we take soil tests every year. In terms of our crop varieties, we change those as recommended by Extension and others. So we're trying to keep them up to date all the time. So that in our conventional systems, we use Roundup Ready soybeans, and at this point, we also use Roundup Ready corn. In terms of what we actually measure, and what I'm going to talk to you about today, when we measure our crop yields, we use a combine. Our plots are 9.1 meters wide, so 30 feet wide by 363 feet or 111 meters long. So they're long, skinny plots, as you saw in the aerial photo. We harvest the middle 3 meters of that, of each of those plots, and the 3 meters on either edge are border areas. We weigh those, adjust them to standard moisture. So that's the crop yield data I'll be presenting. We also measure crop populations in the fall prior to harvest. And we have looked at corn N uptake. We did this in 1996, 97, 2000, 2001, and 2002. And then we stopped doing it for various reasons. But when we did this, we looked at ear leaves from 20 to 30 plants from the length of the plot. And then we dried and analyzed them for total nitrogen. Took the ear leaves at silking, I should mention, too. We also looked at green manure, how much nitrogen we're getting from the green manures. We're asking that question. So we looked at a fairly crude method, I thought, but it turns out it works pretty well, to get biomass samples from our plots, measure the tissue nitrogen content in those samples, and then assume that 50% of that total nitrogen is going to be available to the succeeding corn crop. For perennials, we also added a factor for the nitrogen that's underground based on a publication out of the Mid-Atlantic. For animal manure nitrogen availability, the succeeding corn, we used the University of Maryland system where you sample analyze the samples for total nitrogen and ammonium, and then N availability is according to this equation, where the organic nitrogen, in other words, total N minus ammonium times some factor, which is the proportion of that organic N that's mineralized, plus the ammonium N times a factor for volatilization coefficient, gives you N availability. And the proportion of organic N mineralized varies by the type of manure you have. And I've listed up here the three types of manures we've used over the time period of the project. And ammonium volatilization is dependent on the time period, how many days between sampling and incorporating the manure. We measured weed populations, and we did this by measuring the percent area covered by weeds, the percent of the soil area covered by weeds. This is where John Teasdale's expert skill was pretty crucial. He did this with each plot, split each plot into various sections, did the visual estimates, and did that in early September at weed maturity. For analyses, we did standard ANOVAs by year and by crop, and also across years. We also did a covariance analysis, which is the kind of the heart of what we did, to assess the influence of weed cover, nitrogen inputs, and population on crop yields. We did this on those years where we had good rainfall. And those are the years 1996, 2000, 2001, 2004, and 2005. And you'll see later why we did it just on those years. It was a three-step procedure where we did separate regressions on the corn yield, of corn yield on weed cover, the nitrogen inputs, and populations. For soybean, we just regressed, yield regressed only as a function of weed cover. Each of these variables, we entered into a multiple regression model in order of the ascending AIST statistic from step one. And then we added cropping systems to the resulting multiple regression model as a class variable to determine if the regression accounted for the system effects. And that might be that stepwise process might become more obvious when I show the results. So what do we find over these years? A couple things I want to emphasize in this graph, which will be relevant for the rest of the talk. One is, in the early years, well, first of all, no-till is the dark red bars, chisel-till is the light red bars. The two-year organic rotation is these yellow bars, the three-year is the light green, and the six-year, or four-plus, we're calling it four-plus because in the early years we had a four-year rotation, later it was a six-year rotation. So that's the dark green bar. You'll notice in these early years there are no light red bars. We were managing the chisel-till system as kind of a low input system in those years, so we didn't include those data here because it was a different system at the time. At the same time, we did not include in the early years over here, the first year we didn't include the longer organic rotations because they had a history that was exactly the same as the two-year rotation, so they essentially didn't differ from this two-year rotation. Same issue with in 1997, we didn't include the longer rotation because its history at that point was no different than that three-year rotation. So that kind of clarifies why there's missing data. And you'll see there's missing data throughout, so the ground rules there. So what do we see? We see a huge variability in yields across all systems. Lots of variability from year to year based on weather. I also see that 1999 is missing. It's not because that was my first year there. That's not the only reason. 1997 was really dry. 1998 was a little drier. 1999 was even drier than that. could not harvest anything with combines. There was so little grain out there. In general, you'll notice for the corn yields that our conventional yields tend to be higher than our organic. This is probably the closest year here in 2000. 2001, we get similar yield in our longer rotation, but lower yields in our shorter rotations. 2004, 2005 were very good years, and our conventional systems outperformed our organic ones by quite a bit. So our question is why are we getting these lower yields in these organic systems? This is just to emphasize that a lot of the analysis will focus on these good years so that we're not dealing with water issues affecting our yields. And then also, for average yields, we only included the years 2000 to 2005 because those are the years where all systems are present in the data set. So if we look then at the average corn yields for that time period, we see not only what I just said before, that the conventional systems are out-yielding our organic systems, but that as you increase the rotation length and diversity of the systems here, you also increase corn yield. Okay, so let's look a little bit about why that might be. Again, notice the missing data that I mentioned before. I kind of color-coded these to hopefully make it a little easier. I never like looking at these types of tables with lots of data like this. A couple of things I want to point out is that if you look across our shortest organic rotation, you see a lot more red. And as you go down, you're starting to see some yellows and whites, which are smaller amounts of percent weed cover. Among our conventional, you see generally more white and yellow. We had a few kind of disasters even for a conventional system in 2003. Was a very wet year, and John Teasdale thinks what happens is our herbicides just got inactivated or diluted. So we did get a fair amount of weeds that year. 2001 was the first year that we got a high fall grass population, so we added a simazine control to that, to both systems that year, and after that we generally got very good weed control. Among the organic systems, for the most part, we're seeing a trend where the longer rotation gives us less weeds as you follow through these boxes. Not always consistent, but for the most part, it's looking like the longer the rotation, the better weed control we're getting. If we look at corn ear leaf nitrogen, remember we only did this in some of the years, so I'm only showing the years where we had good data. And in a dry year, a corn ear leaf nitrogen doesn't mean that much. So in those years where we had decent rainfall and we had corn ear leaf nitrogen data, this is what we got. The red numbers are indicating that the corn ear leaf nitrogen is below 2.70, which is a sufficiency level. So in our organic systems, in many cases, we're not getting enough nitrogen based on this measure of nitrogen into our corn crop. In our conventional systems, we're doing pretty good. Since we didn't have corn ear leaf data all years, but we did have nitrogen input data for all systems, what we did is we did an analysis to relate ear leaf nitrogen to estimated available N inputs and came up with this equation, which has a decent R squared. And what if we plug in then the amount of nitrogen we need here to make ear leaf nitrogen 2.70, in other words, a sufficiency level, we find that we need 124 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare to provide sufficient nitrogen for corn in years with good rainfall. So if we look then at our nitrogen inputs, what we see is that in these organic systems, this is now estimated available N inputs, for the most part, in our organic systems, I'm putting them in red if they're less than 124, for the most part, we were not getting enough nitrogen. One year that happened with our conventional as well. If you look at where the nitrogen came from in those years, only in those years where we had, this is hay plus manure, and this is vetch plus manure. Only in those cases when we had both a cover crop and manure did we get enough nitrogen according to this measure of nitrogen availability. When we did a covariance analysis, we found that corn yield was negatively related to weed cover, as you might expect, and positively related to nitrogen inputs and corn population. When we did the multiple regression, this is the equation we get: corn yield equals some factor times negatively related to weed cover, positively related to nitrogen inputs, and slightly positively related to population. Each term was significant, so corn yield is independently affected by each of these variables. When we did the ANOVA with a system as the class variable without any of these covariates, we found a significant effect. But when we did the analysis of covariance, so in other words, when we included weed cover nitrogen inputs and population, we found that we had no significant effect. When we factor in those variables, we don't see a system effect. So these things are affecting corn yield, I'm sorry. When we look at the least squared means of corn yield and associated explanatory variables, we can see that the weed cover is lower in our conventional systems than in our organic systems, and we see the same pattern with decreasing weed cover with increasing rotation length. We see some increase in nitrogen availability with increasing rotation length, and we see increasing crop yield with increasing rotation length among our organic systems. If we partition this out, using this model by plugging in the numbers that we have from our site, we see that this is the amount of yield reduction in our organic systems due to weeds. This is the amount due to nitrogen. This is the amount due to population. When you total those up, the amount of reduction, this is compared now just to the chisel-till system, the amount of reduction is very similar to what our actual numbers were. So we think the model is pretty good. And so when you look at that percent that these factors contribute to that yield reduction, about 21 to 25% due to weeds, 70 to 75% due to nitrogen, and very small amounts due to differences in population. When we look at soybeans, I'm going to go through this pretty fast because I got my 2-minute warning about 2 minutes ago. Same type of data with soybeans. We see the same variability. Conventional tends to be higher than organic. Again, we look just at these, blah, 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 okay. Conventional higher than organic. We don't see the rotation effect, the rotation length effect here. When we look at our weeds, our conventional has much less weed cover, and we see a similar pattern with more weeds down here in the organic, and tend to have more weeds in the shorter rotation. Soybean yield was negatively related to weed cover, and yield was reduced by 17.5 kilograms per hectare for every 1% increase in weed cover. Similar type of analysis, ANOVA versus ANCOVA. When we do ANOVA with system as the class variable, we see a system effect, but when we throw in weeds as a covariate, we don't see a system effect anymore, indicating that weeds are explaining our entire difference there. Same type of thing here as with the corn. Wheat yields real quickly. Not seeing too many differences among systems when we look at average between years when we always had wheat. Some years we weren't able to plant wheat in the fall due to wet conditions. When we look at those years where we had wheat, no differences. So nothing to explain there. In conclusion, the corn, our organic yields were lower than our conventional yields. Nitrogen limitation explained about 3/4 of that difference. Weed competition about 1/4. For soybeans, weed competition explained the whole difference as to why our organic wheat yields were lower than our conventional. And again, wheat, we had no differences. Among the organic systems, increasing complexity of rotations and length of rotations led to an increased nitrogen content of cover crops, most of the time in any case, increased weed control effectiveness, and increased corn yields. It also increased economic performance, but I pulled out those slides because I knew I wouldn't have enough time. And it probably increases soil quality and environmental impact. That's what we're doing some research on now. Finally, so the biggest challenges to organic grain production in the Mid-Atlantic area are to supply enough nitrogen for corn and to control these weeds in corn and soybeans. Both these, however, can be addressed by longer, more diverse crop rotations, but they're not the full story. So future research, we're going to look more closely at the relative contributions of various nitrogen sources and also look closer at weed ecological issues. Thank you. You want to help me put that together? I'm not sure I fully understand the question.
If you grow a less, you know, high return crop like corn less frequently, how do you?
Oh.
You're comparing a long diverse rotation with less economically.
Well, what we did is we looked at corn by itself first, just to look at that, and then we also did it by system, by the whole system, and so we separated out that way. If there's other ways to do it, tell me about it later. Yeah.
When did you turn your bench in alfalfa over? How far before you went
to farm? We went from 3 to 4 weeks about.
A comment we had because bench and alfalfa were decomposed so quickly, but the time your farm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's actually more complicated than that. We had a reduced tillage system in the organic for some of those years in the middle. The time period was a little lower there. And my argument is, yeah, exactly yours, that we should probably have a shorter period, but you got to deal with the weeds, and you got to allow the weeds to have a flush of weeds. So if you have a dry period, it's going to be a longer time period because you got to wait for those weeds to come up and then zap them before planting the corn. So you're always balancing those two competing needs. And one thing we're going to be looking at in the future is exactly that question, though, is how much can you shorten that to take advantage of that quickly available nitrogen? And maybe do some combinations of adding a little bit of rye in there to try to reduce the rate at which it comes out. Problem is then, my understanding is you always get less nitrogen in the end when you throw that rye in there. So you got some real challenges.